Welcome to Tactical Permaculture. I've worked on projects ranging from the poorest to richest clients, from inner cities to suburbs to farmlands to remote wilderness, from the eco-war front lines to celebrity backyards. In over 25 years of service to the earth and the community of life, I've learned that in the fight for sustainable survival, growing is half the battle. Please go to tacticalpermaculture.com to read my blog, watch my videos, view my photos, access web applications, and click on the join membership link to access exclusive features. March 22nd, 2024, episode number 121. This is going to be more of a technical episode, so if you're not a techie person, you may want to skip it. But if you are an internet user and you are curious about secure by design as a web development paradigm, if that's something you're interested in, you may want to stick around. But I'm going to articulate this primarily for my own benefit, so I can verbalize the logic that I have been developing in my private realm. And it's the backbone now of what I'm doing with my website development. And it's been a long process of extricating myself from convenient, that really leaning towards convenience versus taking full responsibility for what my website does and how it's coded. So, yeah, this is going to be very rewarding and very fun, but probably won't be so much for you if you're not interested in cybersecurity. This is what this is mainly about, but also just learning to enjoy the process of skill building and understanding, having a relationship with the magic of computer science and how to be a chef of experiences for the online user. So yeah, I'm calling this the rolling your own headless content management system. And if I were to say a few words about what's intrinsically permaculturalistic about that, is the idea of the prime directive, take responsibility for your existence. This is part of our existence. It's a big part of it. So to me, it's intrinsic to being a permaculture designer to, not just be passively whatever tool you use to do whatever it is you do, the more you understand that tooling, if you can take it apart and put it back together, more power to you for that. Better you will be in all your endeavors. So to me, it's kind of like taking a website apart, putting it back together, realizing there's a lot of shady risk factors in a lot of the websites that we if we're not skilled designers, or we're semi-skilled designers, which I would say I'm semi-skilled, we would just take things out of the box, pre-configured, and loaded with a lot of what's called bloatware, often, if not outright spyware or malware of different kinds. Most of the time, we would never know what's happening under the hood. Be completely unaware of when code that has been developed by even people with the best intentions gets exploited by people with the worst intentions, or when the code itself was written with the worst intentions and it masquerades as though it was not. So you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. In a lot of these circumstances, the only way to know how the sauce is made is to make it yourself. So that's the word that's used in developer communities, roll your own. Oftentimes people will say, well, there's certain things you should not roll your own, but certain things you'd be better to roll your own. So the idea of a headless content management system, let me just define that a little bit. Let's start with what a headful content management system would be thought of as. That would be the majority of websites on the internet to this day. To my knowledge, the vast majority is still WordPress blog type websites. Most of them, I'm going to say most of them, but a shocking number of them not fully updated to the most security patched version, and also containing any number of third-party non-official plugins or extensions that do all kinds of wizardry that make our lives easier and allow us to do what would otherwise be very expensive bespoke development projects. We'd have to hire very expensive coders and designers, developers to create. There's a lot of free plugins out there in that ecosystem that can be installed very easily without a lot of administrative experience or certainly not much security vetting. And then again, you're in this situation where even with the best intentions, there's a lot of risk and vulnerability. And then that's more code software with potential vulnerabilities that has to be patched and maintained and updated. Falling behind in that, which we all do, and I certainly do, and I try to keep a routine of updates, but it's almost impossible to account for everything. But you do your best, you got to try at least. But the best way to update software is to not have the software at all installed and not have to update it from someone else's repository where you don't even know if they even control it anymore. This is a side note, but it's on point at this moment, which is that you may have more trust in a code repository that you're drawing your plugins from. You may trust that person, you may know that person, you may find it to be the most secure and trustworthy repository of code that you deploy onto your website from that supply chain. You may be the most trusted thing that you know of. And then all of a sudden, someday, the maintainer of that code repository could decide that it's not supporting itself enough, so they're going to flip it and sell it just to have an exit strategy from it. And now whoever takes control of it, they could degrade it with all kinds of spammy ads, or they could load it with malware and you would never know. And you would be doing the right thing by getting the regular updates, but now you're getting a contaminated, poisoned update, either with sort of benign kind of spammy degradation, or more malevolent, malicious degradation. So again, that all comes back to knowing. You want to know what goes into the sauce. You gotta be the chef yourself. Not everyone's going to do that. But luckily, there is a new ecosystem for, I'm talking about the headed content management systems. Why having that head? I'll get more into that nuance. The idea is all of the code and logic for that code basically is all of those dynamic features are operating in a way where the control panel interface for that content management system just lives in the cloud, and you authenticate into a web page, a web portal to drive that website. It's the difference between, let's say, to make it a more useful metaphor, because headless, it's kind of macabre and it doesn't really explain things very clearly. So I'll think of another metaphor. Actually, it's going to work better. I'm going to say, if you have a very valuable car, let's say you have a sports car that you worked your whole life for, it's your pride and joy, your prized possession, you don't want it to get dented, scratched, stolen, broken into, etc. So it would behoove you to park that vehicle in a garage where you have much more physical control over the security of it. For one, people don't see it from the street, so they don't know if there's value in there or not, or what the value might be. That you're obscuring its visibility, it's out of sight, so less of a shiny target for people is less visible. That's one dimension that's by analogy works well. Parking your expensive car, your valuable car in a garage. Another aspect is that you have a physical barrier around it. So even things like falling debris or branches and whatnot, even accidental injury to it, damage to it, can be prevented. And then for someone who wanted to break into it, they're going to have that much more difficult of a time to get through the security of the garage in order to breach the security of the vehicle. And it's just not low-hanging fruit, and it's not just out there for the taking. Now, most websites that were not built with security in mind as the primary paradigm, and security was a bolted-on afterthought, if that, they're like parking your fancy sports car in a very bad neighborhood, which is the internet is one big giant bad neighborhood. It's not a gated community, sorry to say. There are some attempts, and there are some valiant attempts to make it more like a gated community, but there's pros and cons to that. Point being, the average content management system that allows you to log in with just a username and password, that would be like parking that vehicle of yours not even in front of your house in a nice neighborhood, but parking it in the worst neighborhood, and then walking home and leaving it there and hoping nothing bad happens to it. But really what's happening, while your back is turned on it, for a second, it's getting scratched, it's getting keyed, it's getting broken into, it's getting urinated and defecated in, its hubcaps are being stolen, its catalytic converter is being cut out, it's being joy-ridden, whatever you can think of, all those things are, it's either happening to it, attempted to be happening to it, like people are jiggling the locks. Everybody who walks by is jiggling the locks. That's what a website is contending with out there in the wild on the internet. It's being hammered by attacks of all kinds all the time. I sit there, I watch my server logs, and it's just a nonstop rampart bombardment of nonstop attacks. Mostly they're dumb attacks, just spraying and praying to find a vulnerability in unpatched software. And I get hit with however many hundreds or thousands or millions of requests a day to load vulnerable versions of software that's not even on my server, but they don't know and they don't care. They're just scanning and automating robots that just poke at every... They're basically jiggling the locks. Digitally speaking, in the ether that is the internet, it's relatively trivial to... I mean, in the real world, yeah, to yank on every locked doorknob and every locked car door handle or jiggle the windows of every house that's within reach. You can't physically do that very efficiently in the real world, but in the digital world, you press a button and you can almost shake every lock on the entire internet for an absurdly low price. So to not have your car in a garage and to put it out where it's going to be jerked on like that, I mean, the garage isn't foolproof, it's not perfect, but it is far more secure than just leaving it out there. So a content management system where you have the key to get in the car, but so does anybody with the technological means or even the brute force and blunt means to break the window. Either way, they're able to get access, and if they have the right tools, in fact, there's even high-tech ways. There was a whole sort of scandal about how easy it is to spoof the key fobs and drive away with someone's car became a trending meme, a sort of challenge on social media. Hey, do the easy, quick steal a car challenge and get more likes. So you get the idea. Now, for a headless website, the idea is the administration panel is not a common accessible web portal where anybody who is capable of impersonating you by stealing your credentials to log in with a username and password obviously with multi-factor authentication and other forms of authentication that do not rely on shared secrets, which is a more advanced topic I'll spare for now. But the idea is in terms of protecting the value at risk by siloing it in a garage, the idea is all the control panels, the sort of the private data, the database, all the secrets that you're trying to protect, all of the value, intellectual property, content, etc., that you're serving to the world, it shouldn't be editable. Ideally, if security is the objective, the primary objective, what you publish to the world should be un-f-withable. It should be solid. It should be at some level capable of being dynamic, but locked down in a way to where it doesn't just have a kick me sign on it saying anybody who's competent to impersonate me in an elegant manner or to just use brute force to break in without having to impersonate me, if I make it easy to break in or easy to impersonate me and all of the controls to make everything editable and to be able to steal everything all at once, that's all of the back office, that's another metaphor, the front office and the back office. You put your file cabinets with all of your important documents from a business, you put those in secure locking file cabinets in the back office, which has more security and less access, more surveillance, etc. In the front office, you have whatever merchandise you're willing to put at risk, and even then you might want to put it behind glass in display cases or even lock it up in various ways, but where it's still visible. But that's the idea of the way most websites are operating now. The front office and the back office are in there. Everything's in the front office. That's an even better metaphor than the car in the garage. It's the front office and the back office. The front office and back office is the legacy meat space, brick and mortar way of segregating the highest value, highest risk assets of your company, your business, keeping those in a highly secured environment where they're way less likely to be tampered with or stolen or damaged. But that model, that paradigm from the in real life world did not for some reason hold up in the digital world, where it became too tempting to commingle the back office and the front office and make it all be in one easily breachable environment. So this shift towards a more secure paradigm of segregating front and back office, the way to do that is to say, okay, I'm going to publish my website, and every time I add to it and add content to it, I may be sacrificing a little bit of dynamic functionality, but not necessarily if done right. If that's important and objective, you need to have real-time social engagement features and whatnot. Even then, there's ways to kind of be smarter about protecting that process. But if you can get away with it, if you can get by with more static and less dynamic features, if that can work for you like it's working for me, then it makes sense to use Web 1.0, to put it bluntly. Web 1.0 was far more secure and had far less attack surface that was vulnerable and exposed to the internet, because the administration panel didn't exist in a web portal. The administration panel was you logging into your local computer with your administration password or your user password, you editing the files on the local machine, and then through a very narrow pathway, taking the finished product of those files and publishing them through what would be called FTP or secure FTP. But the idea is it's a very, the corridor between your siloed private computer workstation, even if it's connected to the internet, which doesn't have to be a lot of times. If you wanted to be very secure and air-gapped, you could do all your web development offline, which is pretty much what I do at this point. You know, I do all the page development offline, and then I only sparingly connect to the internet just to publish it, and then I shut it off. I don't even want to be connected all the time on my local machine. It's just more time exposure to risk. That sounds paranoid, but it's really not. It's very intelligent, I promise. So this paradigm shift for security is to move away from having everything, all the administration levers and dials and knobs, and certainly any of the private personal data of your users, their contact information, their billing information, their credit card information, potentially all those things. It's highly regulated, but a lot of people are lax about it. And it's not highly enforced if you're not in the top tier of e-commerce. People get away with murder when it comes to poor cybersecurity and customer data, and breaches happen all the time, and I pay attention. I read the daily breach. I read the Data Breach Today daily digest of news stories, and it's nonstop horror show, and it's mortifying. So spare you all that gory details, but if it's, yeah, for those who find this interesting, I'm going to get into some of the ways that I have restored some of the functionality of content management systems in a more secure and local environment. And yeah, it takes a lot more time if you take full responsibility and you're writing every line of code yourself, which is what I'm doing. With some acknowledgement, of course, that I may be adapting snippets of code, but I'm at the very, yeah, I would say whatever I write, 99% of my own code, and whatever I don't write that I have to implement and adapt, I am reading it, I'm testing it, I'm aware of whether or not it's making any expected or unexpected, what are called, network calls, trying to grab resources from other places, pull in different style sheets and scripts and all of that madness that happens when you don't pay attention. You just install a plugin and you don't know what it's doing. I don't allow that anymore. I'm strict about a policy of, If I'm using any code that I did not 100% write myself, I'm going to thoroughly investigate and audit it. And usually that'll only be a few lines of code relative to even just a page. It'll be a function that I don't yet know how to hand write, and I'll have to take a template of that function, but I'm going to dissect it line by line and make sure that there is no that there's no malicious potential within it that I can possibly be aware of. That doesn't mean that there couldn't possibly be a sort of upstream vulnerability. Like if there's a vulnerability in browser software that makes it so otherwise secure code that I write and I publish is now part of a kill chain, is what they call it, of an attacker being able to exploit something that was would have otherwise been secure, then it's not my problem, and it's on the end user to keep their browser updated and patched, so that when vulnerabilities, it wouldn't be my responsibility to change code. It would be the responsibility of the browser administrators to say, oh, anybody who uses what used to be considered secure code, it's no longer secure, and we're not going to allow it to execute in the browser environment. So when the next update happens, your code may break and it may not work, and your users are going to get error messages. Therefore, it behooves you to be diligent and to be receptive and be responsible and be able to do incident response in a very quick manner, because there could be a breaking change to an entire code language that runs. HTML could have an update that deprecates some feature, and now something that you put into a million web pages doesn't work anymore, and you have to recode all of them to some extent in order to be compliant with the new standards. It evolves quickly. It should be a whole staff of people's full-time job to maintain software that's public, the way that websites are. You can get away with old versions of things when you're running an old computer where you want to play your old favorite video games on or something, and it never touches the internet. That's a different story. Publishing live website data where previously thought to be secure coding practices get proven to be insecure, then it's a moving target. So that's just a little PSA. But to get into some of the, we want to talk about accepting responsibility to sacrifice some of the convenience of relying on a lot of third party code that's not vetted well or impossible to vet. Writing my own code, 99% of it, line by line, writing myself and whatever I integrate, auditing thoroughly. Just to making a best effort. But what I've done to approximate the convenience of a content management system has been a very creative, for me, a very idiosyncratic creative tool chain that is sort of unlikely. I haven't heard of this being done a lot before. I didn't go to school for this, so I'm not learning it. I mean, I've done a lot of tutorials and coursework, but I did not get a degree in this or a formal. I mean, I've gone through entire MIT courses of computer science and math and algorithmic this and that. I mean, so I have an array of academic influence, but I was not trained on a dogmatic sort of methodology. I'm like a musician who doesn't learn music theory by the book, but plays by ear and gleans what they can along the way. And there's pros and cons to that. But for me, where I'm at with it is that it's almost like you take someone with a fresh perspective to look at a problem that you've been staring at for your whole career or whatever, and someone from the outside comes in and solves it in a minute just because they had a totally fresh perspective and they didn't have the self-imposed constraints that you would have if you were classically trained in something. So people can think out of the box if they were never put in the box in the first place. So for me, what that has looked like is that I use a combination of what's called it's an IDE or interactive development environment. The way that if you're creating digital music, you call it a digital audio workstation. The IDE is the development coding programming version of that, where there's all these guardrails. There is security and there's the way that those environments work. It's like a word processor, the way that does the auto correcting and the suggesting of words and underlining words that are misspelled or potentially misspelled. That's what the IDE is for computer code of all kinds of different languages. Pretty much any language out there has its own, or integrated in a sort of multi-language IDE, or has its own go-to IDE. But the idea is it should help you with proper indentation. It should help you with, when you start a line of code, it can interpret and guess what you're trying to do in terms of what the syntax is, how you need to close that tag, if you will, and it will sort of give you as much as it can. And now with AI, it's even going further. But if Steve Gibson, who I put my highest faith in as my security guru, says, don't let AI anywhere near your code, I take that advice. I'm not going to even go there. To me, that's very, very reckless and negligent. As reckless and negligent as self-driving cars. You don't want self-driving computer code. We're going to be in a scary place, scarier than it is now, if that happens, or as that happens. But I'm going to be very, I'm going to be very sparing with that. And I'm not, I would rather learn how to, I would rather take full responsibility. That's the whole point of this. Like, do not outsource, even if it's open source. There you go. If that means you're going to have a simpler, you know, design, then so be it. Probably that's better. It'll probably be more secure. At the end of the day, it doesn't have to be a million bells and whistles on every web page. It makes it slower and impossible to navigate and confusing anyway. So this bespoke tool chain that I've built is with a standard sort of IDE, helps me, like with anyone else writing code, to actually write the code in a manner compliant with the specifications of the code, in ways that, you know, you learn things you wouldn't have learned even on your own. You're like, oh, I didn't know I could do that, but the IDE suggested it, and I tried it, and it worked, and it was great, and it was compliant, and the browsers played well with it, etc. But there are still circumstances where constructing code line by line, doing hundreds if not thousands of lines of code a day, which is where I'm at now if I'm in the zone with something, and, you know, it sounds more impressive than it often is. Usually what you're doing is, you know, if you have a thousand elements, well, this is the way to put it. A thousand lines of code could be 99% the same line of code with only one thing that's different, which is the title or the name or the image file or whatever. But the rest of the code surrounding that tiny bit of permutation is all just sort of telling it what to do. So if that makes sense, you know, you could have a thousand lines of code that are all pretty much doing almost the same thing, but they're just operating on a different, smaller unit. So really that's a lot of copy and paste, but this is where it gets interesting and where I've adapted a tool chain that's, to me, interesting and bespoke, which is the integration of the open source version of Office productivity suite. It's called LibreOffice, and there's a spreadsheet called Calc that gives you all the functionality of a normal spreadsheet you'd be used to. But what is amazing about it for this CMS experience I've created for myself offline is that when I have to be the code chef and I have to take hundreds of lines of code at a time, and I decide I need to make a change to it, often all you got to do is do a find and replace, and it will, like, say you want to add change the size of text or something, and you want to do it across all of the elements on a page, or even an entire website across multiple pages, then if it's a simple if there's a simple way to find and replace that across the spectrum, it's easy enough to use that function. But oftentimes in development, what I find being more, not necessarily more often, but it's unavoidable and you can't get around it, is that sometimes you have to break up repetitive lines of code and you're modifying them and doing surgery on them, and you need to recycle that and create templates for it. And let's say, for example, here's one, this is probably the best use of how I've integrated this spreadsheet technology, is that you can drag, let's say you have, okay, I'm going to try to visualize this now. Let's say you have 100 image files, and they're named image 1, image 2, image 3, on down to image 100, right? And you have to make changes to how that image displays. So the code surrounding the line that says pull this image file from this folder on the server, the story around that request for that file is going to determine the border of it, the size of it. The alt tag is what it is for if images are blocked, or for accessibility, you want it to be able to be displayed in the form of text. That's a best practice that should not be overlooked. And so all of that story of pulling that image it's surrounded by with its tags, it's not as easy as just doing a find and replace on that. You may need to generate 100 of those wrappers where they need to be broken up to where you don't want to have to type in from 1 to 100 all those different on each of those lines of code. And what's great about a spreadsheet is that you can take that line that's image 1, drag that line down as far as you want, and it will automatically increment the numbers. It'll build you image 1, image 2, image 3. Just all you got to do is drag it all the way down. So whenever I've got to do those hundreds or thousands of lines of code, I'll take a line of code where most of it gets repeated, and I'll break it up into chunks, each in their own column on the spreadsheet. So it's, let's say, to make it easy, you have the opening bracket of an image tag, you have the image path in the middle, and then you have the closing tag. So if you had just, let's say, 3 columns of a spreadsheet, on the first column you put in that opening bracket, the second column you put in the path to the file name where it ends in the number, and then the third is where you have the rest of that file name, which is the extension, and then the closing bracket. So if that makes sense, what that leaves you with is the ability, when you break up a line of code in that way, to do a drag down on a file that has an image number, and it will build you all of those numbers without you having to manually type them in. And then all you got to do is double click on the column before it and the column after it, and it will duplicate itself as is with no changes, because there's no numbers in it that would get incremented. And you do that the same with the other side, 2 clicks, and now you've got 100 or 1,000, etc., however many lines of code necessary. And the process of incrementing those values, it's done in its own little column. And then the fourth column becomes a formula that concatenates or merges together in sequence those previous 3 columns, and then you get the emergent property of the full line of code reassembled, where you didn't have to type in all those numbers. You were able to scroll to get all those numbers, and now you stitch them together, and you've got your 100 or 1,000 lines of code, and you copy and paste, and you're done. So I've got that down and figured out to a way where I can do a lot of advanced variables and build actually a workflow where what you would experience posting to WordPress, all of those steps where you put in the date, you put in the tags, you put in the title, you put in a description, you put in a short and a long description, you put in the body, all of those tasks that are made simple and convenient through those interfaces, I've basically made all of that functionality work on these sort of master template web spreadsheets, where the first column can be the data that you enter that gets repurposed all throughout a web page, the title and description and whatever else is going to go on that page. And then that auto-populates all throughout the spreadsheet in different columns, so that I only have to put it in once. I don't have to put it in a bunch of times over and over manually. I put in only what I need to add to a template, and that template, all of those lines of code with all of those tags that have all kinds of squirrely things going on in the middle of them, they're all baked in. But in a way, they're broken up across the different columns, so they get stitched together after putting those variables, and they produce those end results from one column to the next of like, here, yeah, here's a several columns in a row that are slicing and dicing my variable inputs, slicing and dicing them. I can then hide those columns, and then only the finished product, the baked good, or the sort of chef's dish that's done, served, leave that column visible, and then I can go along and click on the top of those finished product columns, copy and paste them, and I've got the entire HTML page from top to bottom rebuilt instantaneously by putting in variables at the left side of the spreadsheet, having the magic line chef work being done in the hidden columns, and then what's exposed on down the line from left to right is the tasks I have to do to copy code into a local document, and then to copy code into a shell terminal to load that in a secure manner across the internet with multi-factor security to the server, and test it, open the browser, make sure it's working right, make sure that the sitemap is updated, and the formatting is correct. Sometimes there are just weird glitches where it doesn't update perfectly, and therefore it's always wise, and it's part of my process to publish the code and then refresh the page, make sure and double check visually that everything worked as intended. And it's certainly, you have to be in the zone. Today I got distracted. It wasn't a security concern, but in that process of rapid fire conveyor belt, local spreadsheet enabled development, that tool chain, I got a phone call, and I didn't know where I had left off. It's possible I could have made some kind of mark. In fact, now I'll know if I ever get distracted. I'm gonna color that column or something immediately, so I know where I left off. It wasn't end of the world, but I did end up with something going wonky, and where did that go? And oh no, where did I leave off? And I something ended up at the top of the page. It should have been in the middle, and it was easy to correct, but it does show that, yeah, it's all consuming. It takes you and gets you into the zone. Once you get in the zone, you don't want to get shaken out of it, because you get in that groove and you're flowing. But I'm very happy to say that's a game changer for me personally, because that means what used to be such a tedious chore of all these individual tasks, and just makes you not want to do it. It makes you, my friend would call, I'm going to say, you get the F-its, and you can imagine what that normally would be, how that would be pronounced. When I say EF, it represents a certain word that I'm not going to use right now. But they say in their family, in their tradition of flipping houses and doing a lot of work, elbow grease to add equity in the houses they buy to flip, And they say if they get the F, it's they stop for the day and they come back to it fresh the next day. Because they know when I start getting frustrated or bored or sort of annoyed with the task, then they start to do it with less consistent effort, and it starts to slack and it starts to get bad. So you should stop. So the mantra is stop when you get the efforts, because you need to give it, you know, fresh energy. It needs to be done right. So for me, that happens a lot when you just go, oh man, this is so tedious. And today I followed that rule. I said, I've been at this all day. I'm getting to a point where I'm feeling a little bit burnt out. I'm going to stop right now. Or if I still want to get something done, I'll switch to a mindless task that doesn't bother me that much and just take care of some odds and ends. But yeah, it does require full attention. It is engaging in that way, and it's rewarding and enjoyable that way. Now I took something that was tedious and I would get the efforts a lot sooner. Now I get the efforts a lot later because of how efficient and how smooth the flow is. All I got to do is, you know, keep track of where I'm at. And I've even added some pretty sophisticated nuance to it, to where, yeah, I'm impressed, but I attribute whatever is impressive about it to the generosity of the developers who've created these open source spreadsheet software that I'm able to use. And all of the tools that I'm relying on with the server software and everything in between. I mean, I'm writing my own code for my own web pages, but the tools that I'm using to write that code, most of them are written by people far more sophisticated than I am, and I'm only using a fraction of the features that are available to me. But at least I know what's going into the sauce, and now I'm able to just bridge the gap between what the trade-off was when I said I'm not going to do these very vulnerable web-based admin portal content management systems just because they're easy and convenient and they save time, because they don't save time and save money if you're responsible for a data breach and your customer's data now becomes a class action lawsuit where you go bankrupt. So if taking a little extra time and front-loading it with more security is what takes that threat off the table, then by all means, I'm going to do that. And I have done that. And it's just more manageable. I'm in the second half of my life, and I just want things to be more elegant and manageable. And for me, if I say I want it to be easier, it really what that means, what that translates for me now is that I just want it to be I want it to be simpler, more elegant, more efficient, and less moving parts. As few moving parts to get the job done as needed. I don't want any excess of sprawling security, cybersecurity risk. So I'm moving in this direction, and I've made it a fair ways. And now, yeah, I mean, if you would have told me years ago that I would be able to basically replicate all of the functionality that I would get from a normal modern content management system, not some of the most advanced features, but the basic web publishing. That's what we're talking about here. Publishing text and images and video and audio to the internet on a web page that you are responsible for. It's different if you're posting to social media. Their security staff and their army of lawyers are responsible for securing your account and everyone else's account. That's a totally different relationship. It's, of course, there's all kinds of trade-offs there. But when it comes to taking responsibility for your own website real estate, the security of it, the privacy of it, the tool chain that you use to authenticate into it and to modify it and post to it, you know, I'm just taking this moment to feel accomplished, because yeah, I would have believed that it would be possible. I wouldn't have understood the utility or the value of it many years ago. I certainly understand it now, but I definitely would not have expected that I would be able to study enough and develop the skills enough to where I could actually replicate that convenience of web publishing with a combination of an IDE. And whenever I need to automate tasks, I don't have to write a ton of Python code to open files and close them and search for this and modify that. And then have to, I mean, the thing that pushed me, if this, anyone can appreciate this, whoever appreciates this, they will get a kick out of me saying this, is it like, the thing that pushed me to realize, aha, I can automate a lot of this in a far more elegant manner by augmenting the power of the IDE, by automating certain tasks and workflows with a spreadsheet. The thing that pushed me that mainly was trying to build automation tools with Python and Bash scripting and other languages, and getting to a point where there was more escape characters than there was code after a while. When you're trying to generate code from code where they share a syntax of backslashes and quotes and single quotes and double quotes and ampersands and question marks, all of these characters that are interpreted by the code compiler or interpreter, you have to use what are called escape characters, so that if you want code to write code, then you have to tell the code what code to do its code thing on and what code to not do its code thing on. And I realized very quickly that it was, you would have to be, this is just the arch genius, which I am not, to manage that process, even in the IDE where it's necessary at times. Man, it's one of the most mind-twisting tasks to have to figure out. And if you want to automate it and do it over the course of all kinds of different lines of code, man, that is a lot of escape characters, and it just, you go blind looking at it. It's insane. It's no longer as unintelligible as any code language already is. When you start having to make it look like it's going upside down and backwards, it's crazy making. It's crazy. If anybody who is very good at that and really enjoys that, wow, I would, you know, my hat is off to them. For me, I realized, oh, I can avoid that nightmare by integrating a spreadsheet into my tool chain. The only thing that I've seen that's been a drawback from that is how sometimes it has its own kind of weird version of apostrophes that get misinterpreted. So I sometimes have to bounce it into a different text editor and replace, or bounce it into the IDE, and then it'll say, what the hell are these bizarre, non-standardized? It's basically just a cutesy thing of having the left apostrophe be curled curled to the right, and the right apostrophe to be curled to the left, kind of a thing, which is just a little bit of a nuance. If there's a way to change that setting, I know I could dig deep into the code and change it since it's open source, but for now I've been able to get away with just manual, or just selecting all those and replacing them with the standard single straight up and down apostrophe with no flair, and then I can get the job done. But that's been the only drawback. So now I have this spreadsheet that is got all of these sort of scrapyard template processes from all the different apps I'm building and pages I'm building, where, yeah, if I'm going to upload 100 new images to the website, then I know where to go to take that template of that sort of conveyor belt of template code, and then I can just drop in those variables and it spits out what I need, and I copy and paste that into the main document, upload it, and that's that. So the sky is the limit. And I'm also getting man, it's so amazing to learn. I mean, I can't emphasize enough how grateful I am and how interesting it is, the way that intuitive logic that we take for granted about navigating the world, tying our shoes, operating a machine, whatever it is, we take for granted so much nuance of procedure just from our life experience. Everything is sort of muscle memory for us for the most part in daily life. But for programming a computer and you want it to do it, it's like I've said this before. This is kind of an exaggeration, but the sentiment is that for every one task you want a computer to perform, you have to tell it 9 tasks not to perform in order for it to perform the one task without the chance of it misinterpreting it or being vulnerable to be manipulated to do other tasks that it wasn't told not to do. So it's as much, if not a lot more, about negative programming than it is actually producing or telling it to produce the result you want. And that's where you get into all the different abstraction layers of higher and lower code languages. I'll spare you the details on that. But hey, at the end of the day, it all boils down to ones and zeros and everything above that. You're operating at a higher level of code. Most people are not coding with ones and zeros. I made a joke about that before. I'll skip it for now. But yeah, if that means anything to you, find this interesting, you have experience with this, you want to talk shop about this kind of stuff, I would love to connect. I'm all about it. I'm having the time of my life. And again, I salute and just have infinite appreciation for all of the people smarter than me that make it possible for me to do the humble things that I do. Appreciate them immensely. And every day is new and exciting and engaging because you continue to learn more ways to optimize the workflow moving forward. And then you always have the opportunity to go back in time to things you did earlier and give them an overhaul and bring them up to your current skill level. That's an interesting reiterative kind of recursive process as well. So yeah, that was some technical behind the scenes stuff. Hope you enjoyed it. Take care. Cheers.